You are listening to a podcast from the New York Oracle Users Group. The information given here is provided on an as-is basis. The presenters, as well as the officers and steering committee of the New York Oracle User Group, disclaim all warranties expressed or implied with regard to this information and will not be responsible for any loss or damage arising out of the use of any information contained in this presentation.
So I'm going to start with a question. When I talk about history, my kids run, just to let you know. But there's one date they have to know, and I say this is the most important date in all of history, of all of mankind, in my opinion. And that date is the night of August 29th, the morning of August 30th. So who could tell me what happened on that day, in a nutshell? Anyone? I can't tell that. That would give it away if I tell what year, right? I can tell you it happened not far from here. And it was George Washington brought his troops to go fight the English, right, who were attacking Long Island. So here you are, greatest army in the history of the world is hopping on Long Island at the end, the far east side. I don't know where it is, somewhere out there, east. 60 miles east of here, roughly, right? Biggest army in the world. I remember a comedian talking about it and saying, you know, okay, this is a real unfair fight. You know, the Americans versus the English. So we're going to put the English in bright red coats. And you guys are going to have to go in straight lines, you know, so it's easy to get you. And the Americans, you know, you're going to be camouflaged, hide behind trees, and run away whenever you start losing. So on August 29th, what happened? Washington comes across and goes to fight, brings half his army over to Long Island, runs across Long Island, gets to the English and finds out, I don't think I can win this. Starts retreating, he's losing. And if you ever read a book called George Washington, His Excellency, which is an excellent book, a very small book, all you do is you read this book, and this is pre-general of the American, you know, revolutionaries, George Washington, when he's, you know, part of, you know, the UK's army or English army. And all you do is you're reading this book and you're like, wow, he's horrible. Keeps losing. Bad strategy. So many mistakes. Over and over and over. Kind of like a DBA. You know, if you're a beginner DBA, the difference between you and the advanced DBA is they just have made a lot of mistakes that nobody knows about. And that was Washington. So then he made another mistake. You're going to fight the biggest army on earth. Do you think you ought to take all your troops onto an island? Not to mention they had the best navy. You know, an island. Not a very good idea. So he goes onto an island and he goes all the way across Long Island to get to the end only to find out he's losing, retreating. All the way back to Brooklyn Heights. It's August 29th. The English are like, okay, these guys are toast. You know, got them blocked into Brooklyn Heights. We're going to go attack them in the morning, and Washington's like, okay, I got an idea. We're going to all escape in the middle of the night. I'm going to leave a few people out there to make it look like we're still there, and then we're going to escape in the middle of the night. So what does he do? They get some boats. The weather doesn't cooperate. What do we find about Long Island? Weather doesn't always cooperate out here, does it? It's part of being on an island. So they can't get out in time. He's late, leaving. The ships are going across. It's daybreak. All the English have to do is send a ship. This is August 30th and block them. But what happens? A fog rolls in that morning and blocks their retreat. So Washington escapes. Sheer, miraculous, divine intervention. And he gets away, crossing the East River. Gets to Manhattan. You know, he's kind of in the clear, but Manhattan is also what? It's also kind of an island, in a way. You know, you can get stuck there, too. So now he's getting chased all through Manhattan, going up North Manhattan, past Yankee Stadium, right? And he decides, I'm going to cross over the Washington Bridge, which isn't there yet. And he's getting blocked in again. And what does he do? Again, he says, well, we'll make a secret midnight escape. Right? You think he would have left a little earlier this time? Take into account, you know, maybe the weather. I don't know. You didn't do a good job last time. But no. Again, they're late in leaving. Again, it's daybreak. It's now they're crossing the Hudson River. Ships could have came in and blocked them, but what happens? Divine intervention again. A fog rolls in, covers their retreat. It's daybreak. Didn't work, but a fog rolls in and covers their retreat. So then they run across New Jersey, being chased all over the place, all the way across the Delaware into Pennsylvania. And they're stuck there. So then what do? Anyone? They decide to make another, you know, he's done this, leave in the middle of the night. The English seem to be fooled by this, even though he doesn't ever make it in time. He's getting lucky. So he says, we're going to attack on December, actually he was going to attack on Christmas Day, but they were a little late and he was like, okay, called it off. Moved it by a day. Didn't want to be late this time. So now it's Christmas night. It's going to attack the morning of December 26th, just as daybreak. You know, maybe 4 in the morning, right? So it's crossing the Delaware. It's not very far. You can literally see the other side of the Delaware if you're standing on one side where Washington Cross. Can't quite throw a baseball over. It's further than that, but it's maybe 15 minutes in a rowboat. 20 minutes, they've said. So he's got it all planned out. He's leaving in the right time. And what happens? Does anyone know? What happens this time? What do you forget about?
Snow.
Snow, one thing. Ice, another thing. You know, a few glaciers or maybe close to that. So there's a little ice in the river. Can't quite get across. In fact, it took 6 hours to do what kind of planned for 20 minutes. So instead of arriving at 4 in the morning, they got there at what time? Anyone know? 8 a.m. So you get there at 8 a.m. He still attacks. The only reason he attacked is his whole troops were going to be up. In January, they were done with their enlistment. Most of them were going. So he's like, been chased all across Long Island, all across Manhattan, across New Jersey, into Pennsylvania. Everybody's leaving in another week. Might as well attack. So he attacks Trenton. Goes across, gets there late, attacks daybreak, 8 in the morning, way late. Again, third time. You know, you'd think he'd got it the first two times. And he wins. And then what does he do? Attacks Princeton. And he wins. And there would be a guy in the English historian that would say, never has so few people accomplished so much in so little time that affected all of history. But it all started right here on Long Island. What do we learn from Washington? Plan better. If you don't learn the first time, you don't learn the second time, you don't learn the third time, he got to Princeton on time. That was the fourth time. So learn it eventually. But most of all, you know, expect things to happen. When I look at Oracle, and I'm going to look at 11G, I think the most important thing to know, and what you should learn here is, you're at a turning point in history. You're at a turning point that history has never seen. Whether you do well, looking forward, is going to depend on how well you know how to implement new features. Why? So that you can actually have more time to make a business impact. So that you can take advantage of what Oracle has to make your company that you work for more competitive. It is that, the impact that you can make is unbelievable. Whether you'll make it or not will tell whether you'll survive or not moving forward in this industry. When I look at, you know, globalization, and I've been to China, I've been to India, I've been to Luxembourg, Germany, Finland, Sweden, Netherlands, I mean, you name it, I have been there. UK, Australia, Austria. I've been to all these places. What's different here is people take the lead. They move forward and they leverage what they've already learned. A lot of places I go, they haven't learned all the things you have. Will you take what you've learned in previous versions of Oracle and apply them to this version? If you do, that's what's going to separate you. So what I'm going to look at is 11G. Now I look at 11G. How many people are beginner DBAs? Any beginner DBAs? You're a beginner DBA? So first rule, don't ever tell anybody you're a beginner. After this session, you're no longer a beginner. But beginner DBA gets the 11G disc. Just came out. It's like, wow, 11G. Calls the Oracle salesman. Hey, I just got the brand new 11G. Just came out. Production today. Salesman's like, put it on. You know, load it up. He's like, production? Sure. Beginner DBA does it. Advanced DBA, or we'll say intermediate DBA. Intermediate DBA sees, 11G just came out. Throws it in the garbage. Keeps on working. Doesn't think twice. Advanced DBA says, ooh, 11G just came out. Calls the beginner DBA and says, hey, have you loaded that up yet? How's it working? I've been working with 11G since the alpha, probably early 2007. So it's been almost 4 years now I've been working with it. I would say this is not only the best version of Oracle, but I think it's feature-wise, it's the one that does give you time back. Anyone read Good to Great, Jim Collins? That's a good book to read. But it talks about moving a company from good to great. And good is the enemy of great. You know, if you're a good DBA, it's the enemy of being great sometimes. Sometimes it's better to be bad because people will tell you when you're bad. But when you're good, well, it's good. But you want to move to great. And they talk about moving from, you know, what can the company do for me to what can I contribute? And it moves the direction of what you're doing. Figure I'd put a New York theme. Does anyone know what it is? Where is it? Hey, he even knows the cross street, 116th. Central Park Northwest, right? Northwest corner. Seinfeld's restaurant. I went there, survived. So how many people, version 7 or earlier? Version 6 or earlier? 5? 4? I go to 4. How many people are on 8? 9? 10? It's your first version? Hey, you're not a beginner if you start on 10. 11? Oh, but no 11. How about 11G release 2? We'll look at both. And how many Exadata? We'll look at a little bit of Exadata. So what am I going to do? I'm going to show you things you should be considering if you have 11G. Or you should be considering if you have 10 on why to go to 11. Some of you are like, I don't want the new version. Everything goes bad. And I go, how's the current version? I go, I got enough problems with that. Sometimes the next version, which has problems, has less problems than the current version, which also has problems. So you have to weigh those two things. One thing you won't do is you won't learn everything. You have to use it. That's how you'll learn it. And perfection is elusive. I won't be perfect either. So some of this won't be perfect. Those of you listening to this tape, this will not be perfect. Please send any comments to rich@test.com. Okay. So what are we going to look at? Why Oracle? Know the Oracle. I do executive presentations, and I say, this is why you should use Oracle. I'm going to shrink that hour into about 4 minutes for you. Why Oracle? And I'm going to look at some of the 11G things, memory-wise, virtual columns, invisible indexes, some DDL things, and then some of the Oracle Enterprise Manager things for tuning. A little bit on Exadata, a little bit on some special features like ADR, and then maybe some advanced things on how Oracle tunes things. So first, know the Oracle. How many people went to this Oracle user group? It was 2 years ago, Oracle World. Not just the one a couple months ago, but the one prior to that. I went there and I was like, it's Aerosmith. I mean, the headlines were, you know, Steven Tyler fell off stage, he's not playing anywhere, and there he was playing at an Oracle conference. Then I was like, wow, that's pretty amazing, Aerosmith. And then I walked a little ways over, and there was Roger Daltrey on a different stage from The Who. And you walked a little further, and there was Stevie Nicks on a different stage. So how big is Oracle? That's big. That's big. What about Larry? What's important? I admire risk takers. Who's he talking about? He's talking about himself. Leaders, people who do things before they're fashionable or popular. Finds that kind of integrity, interesting use of the word integrity, that kind of integrity inspirational. He likes leaders, people who are trendsetters. What is Oracle? Leader, trendsetter. Creates the bend in the road. Oracle doesn't say, I think the road's going to turn left. Oracle says, the road's turning left, and if you're not turning left, you're going off the cliff, because we're creating a cliff over there, and we're creating a road that's going left. Either get on the road, or you're going to fall off. There is no other way. They create that turn. And if we look at Oracle through the years, they started very technical. First 32-bit, first client server. And I know it because I built this with Oracle. I was at Oracle when this happened. First 64-bit, first web, first Java, Linux, XML. Then they started getting into clustering, grid database. Then they started making acquisitions. PeopleSoft, Hyperion, BEA. Then they bought Sun. Got into hardware. Java. Now they're getting into commercial. You look ahead, zoom ahead 5 years, Oracle is in the commercial market with Java, I guarantee you. MySQL, maybe defensive. Open source database. Solaris, hardware. OpenOffice, competitor maybe to Microsoft. And then Oracle taking those acquisitions and going further with them. Already with MySQL clustering. Already with the next version of Sun, Exadata X2.8. The next version of a web server for the cloud, Exalogic. We'll see each of those in a little bit on it. So Oracle is already leveraging these acquisitions. So what is Oracle like? When I went to work for Oracle, and it was back in the time of client server, I walked in and I met somebody I knew from the Marines. It was like, Rich, you got to come to this company. I mean, they're so out of control. Just went public last year. Unbelievable. You're perfect for this. And I'm like, how am I perfect for this out of control company? You know, what does that say about me? I don't know. They go, oh, it's fast paced. You'll like it. So I go there and it's Oracle. I'm walking in the first day and I'm like, yeah, I'm, you know, a new consultant here. And they're like, congratulations. And I'm like, well, what do I do? And they're like, oh, you geeks sit back there. I'm like, I don't know what that means, but okay. I walk back, boxes everywhere. There's somebody back there, like, you sit wherever you want. Choose. And I'm sitting there trying to put together a cubicle of computers, VT100, I think. VT220, I don't know what it was at the time. And then some guy comes up a couple hours later. He's like, Nemec, right? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, get in class. I'm like, okay. Where's class? And so I go in the class, and it's Oracle Forms, the first graphical version of Forms. And if you use version 4 of Oracle, I had question and answer. This was like the tipping point between those two. So I'm learning this. I mean, Monday afternoon, that's kind of cool stuff. Tuesday, I'm starting to catch up from what I missed on Monday. It's Wednesday afternoon. I've gone in like a couple of days. They're like, Nemec, get out here. And I'm like, what? They're like, oh, we're teaching you. We're sending you to a class to teach. And I'm like, what am I going to teach? I don't know anything about this stuff. And they're like, no, you're teaching this class. And I'm like, this is a 5-day class. And they're like, no, you're going to compress it into 2 days. I'm like, I've only seen 2 days, but they're like, great, good luck. See you later. You're off to Alabama. And they sent me to Alabama. And then I got back and survived that, stayed up the entire night learning the rest of the class. Then I came back the next day and they're like, oh yeah, you're teaching another class, next version. I'm like, you're going to let me see like half the class before I teach it? They're like, no, here's the book, see you later. Then the next time, they're like, oh, you're teaching another class. I'm like, what am I teaching now? They're like, here's our new product. It hasn't even come out yet. Go get a download from Belmont. That's Oracle's headquarters was Belmont at the time. And figure it out. So then I end up at NEC Corporation. and I'm working on what's client server, which the salesman has sold. So the salesman has sold client server, and we're trying to implement it, myself, Brad Brown, Joe Trezzo, and we're like, this stuff is not working. And we literally had to have so much memory. Oracle, I would call them up, and I'd go, we're doing client server. We've got to have more than a 1 meg SGA. And they're like, 1 meg SGA? You don't need more than a 1 meg SGA. Nobody has that big of an SGA. That's how small it was at the time. It was preposterous to ask for more than a 1 meg SGA. So we have all this memory stacked out of the box. Used to melt the memory cards. But NEC would like say, go to the warehouse, grab as many as you want. So we're melting these things down. We're figuring out a way to do it with fans blowing on the memory cards so that they don't melt. We had a disk, which is like, certainly wasn't beta, some sort of alpha thing that would shake. 300 meg, it was the biggest hard drive that existed at the time, but it would shake the entire table and knock everything out of the machine. So I had to bolt it to a separate table to keep it from breaking the original machine. So then we still had these issues, and we'd call Oracle support through the back door, which was Bud Redman. You would say, I'm Bud Redman, which we thought meant, you know, that's great. And they were like, you know, you're Oracle Consulting? And we're like, yeah. And they're like, what, are you idiots? You can't figure it out on your own? And we're like, no, I thought that's why we call you guys. They're like, client server? There's people doing client server? They do client server. He goes, there's three guys in Chicago doing client server. And we're like, no, that's us. And it's not working. And they're like, oh, good luck with that. That's Oracle in a nutshell. Take the best guys in the world. Work them 80 hours a week, 100 hours a week, 120 hours a week. Run as fast as you can. And, oh, if you can't run that fast, we'll see you later. And when you can't run that fast anymore, see you later. So very, very fast, high speed, best people in the world. And once you can't do it, then you're out. And oh, by the way, now we're going to start acquiring companies to do that too. So if you're a company and you say, I want to compete with Oracle, well, guess what? You're 30 years behind of taking the best talent in the world, working them as hard as anybody could ever be worked. Now, they'll pay you more too. You know, sales guy, we'll pay you double if you can sell. We'll pay you triple even sometimes than other salespeople. But you got to be able to do it. And then they did that for 30 years, and now they're here. You are here. And then let's start buying companies at just the right time when the economy goes down. Who bought companies in the last depression? Does anyone know? 1929, 30s? Who's buying all the companies? General Electric. Who was big after that? 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s? General Electric. Oracle's that company now. You want to see the company who's going to be the leader coming out? You look at the company making the acquisitions now. That's where Oracle is now. If we look at when Oracle did IPO, some people go, well, you know, you got Google, you got these other guys. We'll create an Oracle type of environment so this will occur for other companies. Now, I just go, well, when Oracle IPO, they had this Sun acquisition first, who I think it was Groucho, Chico, and Harpo, and Scott McNeely got together. And think about, you know, how impressive is this name? Stanford University Network, let's call it Sun. See the little acronym there? It's as good as they could do. That was March 4th, 1986. March 12th, 8 days later, Oracle. So 8 days after Sun was Oracle. You got Larry, the guy who wrote the Oracle database. Anyone know who it is? Is it Andy? No? Anyone? Gupta? He was later. I'll tell you that Bruce Scott, though, who is Scott Tiger, he's holding a one-year thing. This is for a New York Yankees baseball. No? Bob Miner. If you ever go to San Francisco, there's a restaurant called R&M's. Stands for Robert Miner. Run by his daughter. And Ed Oates. So Larry gets together with these three, and then their first developer is Bruce Scott, who is Scott Tiger. Tiger was his daughter's cat, and that's Bruce. But Bob Miner, who is a math major, is the guy who builds Oracle, who writes it. IPO'd 15, closed the day, up 38%. Could you imagine? Oh my gosh, my stock is up 38% in a day. Should I sell? Well, if I don't, it'll be up about 30,000 times in the next couple of decades. So hopefully you don't. One day later, who IPOs? One day! March 12th, March 13th! A day later, this guy. Would you have invested in this company? There's Bill Gates. Now, I don't know what the story is on this, but I have my own thought. I thought, you know, here's Bill Gates and he's got his date and they're going to Woodstock. It's just my own thought. And they won't let him in. They're like, you got to be at least 13. So he's like, well, that's it. I'm upset about this. I'm taking, you know, Janis Joplin, Jerry Garcia, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Donny Osmond, Manson Brothers. I'm taking them all and starting a company. You guys will see. But what's the difference? 10 days changed the world because we had this common foe of IBM, that Microsoft, Oracle, and Sun. It's not one company IPOing, it's three companies IPOing at a turning point of technology and pulling their resources to compete against a very tough competitor at that time, who was IBM. Oracle, since then, since the IPO, about 50,000 times growth. So can somebody catch them? I don't think so. Now let's look at Oracle today. I went to the Oracle, it was a month and a half ago, Oracle Open World, and this is what I saw. How many people saw Iron Man 2? Saw Larry Ellison in Iron Man 2. He's in there. The guy's like, hi Larry, how you doing? There's Oracle all over the movie. All over the place. You'll see Oracle got to be 10, 20 times in there. And then there's a point where he's like accessing the Oracle grid, trying to trace a phone call, and he's accessing the Oracle grid. It's like this 3D spatial. I'm like, that is not the Oracle grid. But maybe in the future. So maybe this is the future. And then I'm looking at the Iron Man suits I saw in the movie at the Oracle conference. And then what do I see? I see an Exadata box. I see an Exalogic box. And my thought was, there's like $2-3 million right there. If you look down at Oracle, I went up to the W Hotel, took a picture. This is Moscone North, Moscone South, I believe. Might have it backwards. And Moscone West is over here. And this is Howard Street. This is the biggest street in all of San Francisco. It's like the most used thoroughfare, and Oracle blocks it all off. Cab drivers are like, they can't block off this street. Then they see all the people and they go, oh, okay, it's okay then. But this is how big they've gotten. It's not big enough to have a conference center. It's not big enough to have two conference centers. They added one since Moscone West, still not big enough, block off the whole street. And every hotel has Oracle in it. That's how big it's getting. There's Moscone West. Built it a few years back. I don't remember how far. You go into the vendor hall, look how far these booths are. It's as far as you can see. Each of these has an Oracle product on it. Four Oracle products, one on each side. So there's four sides with an Oracle product on each side. That's how many there are. You just take your kids there. I always tell people, the most important thing to know about Oracle is teach your kids Oracle. It will never starve. But you go there and just say, okay, son, pick out a product. Get great at it. If you look to the right this way, there's as many booths as you see this way, there's the other way. That's how many Oracle products there are now. Then you go across the street, there's another vendor hall with all this again. That's how big Oracle is getting. Then, if you go less than a mile up, there's Java World. 9 million developers. Oh, another street blocked off. I think it was Mason Street, which is another big street. 97% of desktops run Java. 5 billion Java cards in use. Tell me Larry is not going to monetize this. I mean, those of you who have seen Oracle, the guy is as good at monetizing anything as there is. Java is commercial. That's what's coming. Then you go into the hall and you see this, which is the oldest sports trophy there is in sailing. Which is, what's that called? America's Cup. Thank you. America's Cup. And you go, it's not even enough to keep Larry busy. He's still sailing, winning the America's Cup. Meanwhile, I went to this guy. He's got white gloves on. He's like protecting it. And I'm like, you know, can I hold it for a 20? He's like, for a 20? I'm like, okay, how about for 100? See me later. He didn't let me hold it. Meanwhile, through all these acquisitions, Oracle, so now we fast forward to 2007 when Oracle 11G comes out. Oracle has all these acquisitions going, and meanwhile, 11G is extending what they already have, managing the grid, self-tuning, because they know, guess what? Not enough tuning is happening. We're going to do it for you. Better encryption. People are losing things. We're going to encrypt it, so if you lose it, it's not a problem. Better testing. Andy Mendelsohn, still the lead. Andy Mendelsohn, he doesn't have to work. He's been at Oracle for a long time. He's big on helicopters, has several Bell helicopters. Doesn't have to work. So Oracle has people in the footsteps of Bob Miner, who passed away about, I think it's about 15 years ago now, has this development group in that mold of Bob Miner, who still continues to put out this incredible database, whether they have to be there or not. Meanwhile, they're acquiring Siebel, PeopleSoft, JDE, and coming out with new versions of that, as well as Oracle 12 apps, predecessor to the next version. They acquire PeopleSoft, acquire Siebel, acquire Hyperion. BEA says no. They did acquire them. And then they buy Sun. So what are they going? Smaller, bigger, 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 bigger. They keep getting bigger. And this is not to mention the 100 acquisitions of smaller companies. Oh, great in-memory database. Might pass up Oracle. It's called Times 10. Oh, bought them. Coherence, maybe even better yet, bought them. Oracle is just putting these in there. And then meanwhile, while all this is going on, 11G wins the award as the database of the year. If we look at Sun, look at Oracle. Market value, almost $100 billion. $22 billion in revenues. Sun, a little less than half of the revenue that Oracle has, but only $6.8 billion in market cap. Why? Why is Sun so poorly valued with so much revenue? Does anyone know why? How much profit were they making? What's that? Negative. Okay, that doesn't help, right? So Oracle buys them and everyone says, oh, Oracle's going to start losing money now. So what happens? Oracle's first full quarter with them here after they close out the acquisition, Q1, 50% higher revenues, in a recession, mind you, than they had the year before. Sun alone, 48% gross profit margin. So Oracle takes something who's doing very poorly and turns them around to have the profit that an Oracle has. That's a dominant player. EU investigates the deal, says, oh, I don't know if I want to do it. And then somebody actually who is part of it approves it. And it becomes approved. Oracle takes the MySQL. People are hesitant. You know, what will Oracle do with this open source? Oracle says, put in the clustering aspect that Oracle has into this database as well. So Oracle extending it. I can tell you one thing about Larry. He never fears any technology. I will never forget when people go, oh, Linux, I don't know. They're a potential competitor. I don't know if we want to do Oracle on Linux. And he goes, everything on Linux. He literally went in the press and goes, we're moving every app server to Linux in Oracle. And people are like, you got to be kidding. He was the first commercial database on Linux. He never resists what's coming next. Always embraces it. Now, of course, you know, they kind of push the market a little. Play by our rules or the penguin gets it. I won't read this one. Oracle has built a new Linux. Oracle Linux goes around Red Hat. It says Red Hat's not fast enough. But why is Oracle going to win in the future? And I say, teach your kids Oracle. Not about the database anymore. Yes, they're the best database. How many years ahead do they have a lead? Easily 15. I have a talk on how Oracle won the database where I compare them to every database. Nobody is closer than 13 years. And nobody is moving faster than Oracle. But now, it's really about the applications. And guess what? They bought them all. They bought all the ones people are using. You go to a CFO and say, what's the best product you ever had? You ask them that 10 years ago, and they'll say Hyperion. Oracle got themselves into the finance area by acquiring Hyperion. What was a big competitor of Oracle Financials? PeopleSoft. What is the best HR program? PeopleSoft. So Oracle made the acquisitions at the right time. But they also have great developers. They've recruited. I remember somebody going to Larry back when Oracle was small and they were pretty unknown. It was the head of MIT and said, you know, who are you guys? And Larry's like, what do you mean? It's like, you are hiring the most MIT graduates of any company in the world and we don't even know who you are. And he goes, you will. Give it time. What if Larry goes, though? I think they have a great management team that they'll supersede this. With Mark Hurd, I remember somebody saying, Mark Hurd, he's one in a million leaders. You have Safra Katz, incredible person at operations. You have Keith Block on sales. Judy Sim, unbelievable person. Has been with Oracle probably a couple of decades, chief marketing officer. But Oracle is great top to bottom. So they'll survive even without them. So now let's get into 11. So any questions on why Oracle? So why Oracle? Because in your lifetime, they will be the most dominant company. And a lot of people that aren't even aware of them, they're watching Iron Man, oh, who's Oracle? You understand they're laying that groundwork, though. This is Oracle way back when. This is Oracle's first place. There's a little sign there. I think it used to be keep off the grass, but actually it's handwritten SDL. Larry Ellison hand-wrote a sign, taped it over this sign, which is the first name of Oracle before they became Oracle, and tapes it on there. So the other thing you learn very early on is Oracle wanted people to know, we're here. So the incredible initiative, very early on, you already see the attributes, Oracle today. I'm going to cover primarily 11.106, but also 11.201, and I'll let you know when it's 11.2. So if you have how do I get to 11.1? Well, I can go from 9.2 all the way to 10.2, jump there, or I can even go 7.3.8.8.1 all the way to 9.208, and then jump to 11. So different upgrade paths. There are command lines to extend files. I can upgrade from things like the Express Edition. So if you have the free version of Oracle, they have a path to get you to the pay version. See, some people go, well, I need open source because I just have something small. I don't need that costly Oracle. And they're like, that's okay. We have something called Express Edition, no cost. Once it gets big enough, you're going to want to move it to Oracle anyway, so we'll give you a path to get there. Oracle also allows you to move database files in ASM, does some diagnostics, some really nice things the upgrade assistant does, checks for invalid accounts, invalid data types, objects, desupported character sets. Do you have adequate resource? All the things that you would error out and have to reinstall because you didn't know you were missing something. So Oracle, very early, is listening. What's causing you pain when you upgrade and they're trying to fix that? Then you log on, 11.106, connected, Oracle started, SGA, database mounted. If you're the beginner, you get this and you're after a recovery and you're like, yeah, I've done it. Then you find out this last line is very important. It all worked. And here's 11.2, same thing. You can also use Enterprise Manager to start up. Give it a logon password. It's starting, etc. It'll tell you if it's up, the database is up, if the listener is up. How many people use Enterprise Manager? And how many people use the tuning pack? Ooh, you're going to want the tuning pack after this talk. So the first thing is you see how Oracle's performing. How's it looking right now? Pretty taxed. I have a problem here. I should be clicking on active sessions right now to see what this problem is. You will see a lot of screens where we go, click on active sessions, and we're going to start from that screen. I'm going to show you how to do things. So users are using it. We have different alerts going on. We'll hit that in a minute. On 11GR2, really looks the same. The only difference is maybe there's this HA portion. So a high availability portion. And in this case, it's telling me, do you have enough space for this recovery? And then it has my flash recovery area, used and unused. And I'm running out of space there. It also gives me uptime in this high availability. It'll tell me what's up and down. It'll also give me a security evaluation. And then how much time it's going to take to recovery, you know, and do I have the area for flash recovery that's needed? So a lot of new things for high availability. Oracle is moving to, we want your system to be up 24/7 every day of the year. The next thing they did is they built a parameter called memory target. If you talk to other DBAs, they go, you know, and this is maybe past 10 years or so, they'd say, well, you know, Oracle's just too complicated. I use SQL Server, it's that, you know, you got all those Anora parameters, hundreds of them. And I always say, well, you really only need one in 11G. Now, to me, the SQL Server, if you're Oracle DBA, you got to know SQL Server anymore. To me, it's like a throw-in. You know, they're like, oh, while you're the Oracle DBA, I'll do these 10 SQL Server DBAs while you're at it, databases while you're at it. But now Oracle has put everything into one parameter for you. Used to, and we could see this coming with SGA Max 9i, SGA Target, and 10G. They started putting things like data cache and shared pool. And now they have memory target, and it adds the PGA in there as well. So if we look at all the things that make up the SGA, you can see here in the center, all those data-related type of things. We're now adding all those process-related type of things into memory target. So the SGA Target used to have these fixed things that if I set the SGA target, it would automatically size these for me. And then I could manually size certain things. It didn't size it for me, but I could size these things. And in 10G, I can only do the log buffer and the P file, keep in mind. And then I had the PGA aggregate target is now all of that sorting area. All that when I join multiple tables and it has to sort them together. So now they put it all together in memory target. So I used to have this, SGA parameters, and now I'm going to these memory parameters. And maybe initially you'll be set up like this with your PGA aggregate target and SGA target set, and you'll have to go in and alter and set your memory targets, memory max and memory target. But you should also, in addition to that, set minimums for other things. You should set minimums for the cache related to data, for the shared pool and things like that. Because what Oracle does is they're, or when you set a minimum for these parameters, Oracle will not go below that parameter. So sometimes you go, gosh, they're taking things from the database cache and giving them to the shared pool, and then all of a sudden I need a lot of data, and I don't have enough on DB cache size. And it's got to shift back too quickly, maybe. So you set a minimum for these. So all the things you used to set, you should probably still set with at least a minimum. That's my advice there. And then this is just an enterprise manager. This is SGA and PGA, two different colors. And then this is the individual breakdown. I know it's a little small, but shared pool, buffer cache, large pool, and things along that way. I also, in 11GR2, it gives me, I'm just going to zoom in here. Let's see how well this works. If I go, and I'm just going to look here with this little magnifier. And you can see it now shows you the shared pool, buffer cache, large pool, etc. All those things that automatically set, but I could set them here. Isn't that nice? And if I go to the next slide, once I use that, I can never go back. And it also has the memory advisor in 11G2, and you can see the PGA target and where it's advising me. And then it also, on the PGA side, it will tell me if it's in a one-pass execution or a multi-path execution on those statements that I'm using in the shared pool. Or that I take it back, as that I'm using in the PGA. So what is 11G doing for you? It's saying you don't have to set all those. But if you need to set them for your particular system, we allow you to. If you need to set minimums, not to fall below, we allow you to. But we'll take care of it if you need it. The next thing I want to look at is buffer cache and result cache. How many people flush the buffer cache now when they're tuning? So if you run a query, what happens when you run it again? Well, it's in memory, right? How do you get it out of memory? It's like some people go, Rich, you know, you've written 3 different tuning books. You've been tuning for 20 years, 80 hours a week. That's like 60 years of anyone else's life. What's the best tuning tip there is And I'm always saying the best tuning tip is run it again. They're like, run it again? I'm like, yeah, the user calls you up, says they have a problem, they ran something, it's slow. You go, really? Run it again. They run it again, they go, oh, it's much faster now. You go, oh, glad I could help you. Let me know if I could help in any other way. Well, why is that? Because it's in the buffer cache. So when you're tuning stuff, it's the same problem. You're running it again. It's in memory now. It's faster. So Oracle gave you a way to flush the buffer cache. This is in 10G. So that when you tune something, you can flush it out to make sure you're not hitting the same thing. So if we look at, I run some little count star, and you can see it does 6 physical reads, 7 memory reads, of which 6 of them are physical. And then I run it again, and of course it's in memory, so now no physical reads. And all the 7 are memory reads. And I go, well, that's not good. I want to see what it's really like, so I'm going to flush the buffer cache and run it again, and I find, yeah, it's still doing physical reads. So that's the way to truly find out if I'm tuning something. But Oracle is taking this in 11G and saying, hey, I kind of like that. Things are in the cache. We're going to build something called the result cache. So when you do some sum or some average, and it's in memory, we're just going to leave it there and go get it again. So Oracle is using that cache again. And it takes this memory from the shared pool. Like the shared pool, I can also flush it and things like that or force it. But basically, it's just, you know, I'm doing something like a sum and a max, and I'm going to do it again. So basically, we tested this, and we said, well, we'll take this a million rows, I think we did. Let's see if it says here. I think it was about, yeah, a million row test. So we ran it, not cached, 3.8 seconds. Then the statement was cached, but the data wasn't, 3.2 seconds, so not much faster. Then we said result cache hint to use it, still 3.18 because it's just storing it at that point. And then step 4, now it's actually using it, 0.86. So we should have done that in the first case. If we're going to use this in the first case, we'd already had this in the second one. And then if I basically want to do a package, you can see here's an example of using a package. I have a function, and then here's my actual query where I'm doing an average. And then I say the result cache relies on the employee table. So if the employee table changes, well, then it's got to re-get the values as well. And then I can go to different VDollar views. To look at that, I can actually change init aura parameters. I haven't tried all of these, but you might try them. But one thing I want to say is Oracle is using this for statements themselves. So in addition to you using this, you'll see Oracle's next evolution of this with Exadata. Oracle using the flash cache of results that are already there. How many people use DBMS XPlan? Yeah, so if you don't use this, I just put it in here to say, hey, this is great. And then you could just do a select from the XPlan and it shows your last explained plan. It's a lot better than selecting from the plan table. Since I use it a lot here, I wanted you to know that. So now let's look at the virtual column. New feature. A derived expression, so multiple columns. Let me just go one ahead. So maybe I have a salary column and I want a yearly salary, so I could say up salary times 12. That's kind of a simplistic result. But the nice thing about this, now let me go back, is the virtual column, it's not stored, it's not physically there, but if I want, I can create a physical index, which is a function-based index. And actually SQL Server has something, oh, we have that, but they really don't because theirs is even computed. So they don't physically have a physical index. And then the update, if I do an update on a virtual column for Oracle, it actually will do the operation on the update versus in SQL Server, I'll do it on the select. So it's kind of, you go, oh, the update, it was very fast, and then you do a select, and you're like, wow, what's taking so long? And it's because it's finishing the update. It hasn't stored everything completely. Those of you who, like me, who look at benchmarks, know that the way people cheat on benchmarks is when you do updates, inserts, deletes, sometimes some of the work that's being done happens on the next time somebody selects the data. So if you see some DML operation occurring when you're doing a select, it's because somebody has pushed part of the process later. That doesn't change the fact that the data changed. It's just, it's there. It just hasn't fully worked through how the block is changing. So it's a little bit of a trick. So that's the virtual column. Next one is the invisible index. I had this just because the last IOUG conference was in Vegas. I went to the craps table and I was like, how do you play this? They're like, just put your money down, let's go. They like, hurry up. And I'm like, well, all right. I don't have much money I'm going to spend here, so I'll throw some down. And they're like, oh, it needs to be here. And they throw the dice a couple times and it's gone. And I'm like, wow, that was fast. I go, do you have flashback here? flashback transaction? And they're like, flashback transaction? So I explain to them what this is, and they're like, I don't think you should be gambling. So now we tell users there's such a thing, users are like, run it again, Sure, I get it. Now all of a sudden you say, well, I'm going to give you an invisible index. They're not going to believe you, first of all. But there is an invisible index, and that's somebody, what's the biggest problem with third-party applications? Is they put too many indexes on it, usually. You'd like to drop them, but, you're going to drop them, and then somebody needs them a week later. Or you wait, a couple of months, then you drop them, and then it's end of quarter, and then they need them. So now Oracle gives you a way to just turn it off. Alter it as invisible. Keeps on maintaining it as if it was there, just doesn't use it. So that you could see after a period of time, they really don't need this index. How much does it cost me to do a DML operation on an index column? Twice as slow? Twice as long? How much? How much to update the table and the index? More than twice. It's more than twice. Kevin Loney tested it once on different three-part index, concatenate index, multiple indexes. It was like a degradation of almost 90% on various ones. It ranged anywhere from 30% degradation down to 90-some percent degradation because of an index. So depending on what kind of an index it is, etc. But they're costly. So this is a way to find out, do I really need it? Now, the way I set it is just create it to be invisible or alter it to be invisible. Then when I select it, even though there's an index, it doesn't find it. Doing a full scan. I can force the index if I want to use it to see what it is. So if I know it's there, I still can do it. Now somebody says, oh, that's really slow. You go, it's really slow? And then you run this script and you go, try it again. That'll be really fast. So you have a way to quickly turn it on if need be. And then it goes back on. And then this, I thought I'd throw in here because this is probably one of my best tuning tips that I use, is no index. And that is, use any index, but not this one. And I want to see what a query would do not using a particular index, but trying to use any other ones that it might use. That's kind of a nice little hint. And then here's just, if you want to check the invisibility or visibility of DBA indexes or user indexes, how to do that. The next one, create and rebuild indexes. You can create and rebuild indexes even during DML. Does anyone remember in version 10 Oracle goes, oh, and there's no cost? They're like, oh yeah, you can do it while things are running. I'm like, are you sure? Doesn't seem to make sense. And then you would do it like during heavy DML and you're like, wow, it's really slow. Why is that? Then in 11G, Oracle fessed up and said, oh, prior to 11G, we did have to do this exclusive lock at the beginning and the end of the rebuild. Kind of slowed things down, and we don't need that anymore. So now that they really did make it faster, they've actually said, well, in the last version they didn't. So now I can rebuild, and it is much faster. which I thought I'd add in here, is not the same as a coalesce. Some people think rebuild is the same as coalesce. Coalesce is I have a B-treat, here's the height, and then I have these leaf blocks. Oracle will put these leaf blocks and coalesce them together so that I have, you know, free space there. Whereas a rebuild is maybe I'm moving it to another table space. When I recreate it, it will actually shrink the height, but coalesce is just putting the leaf blocks, doesn't need all that extra space. So make sure you're doing what you want to do. Other things Oracle put in 11G, and these are things I haven't seen anybody talk about, but they're spectacular. Just little developer, very good things you got to let your developers know. How many developers are here? Wow, I'm impressed. Now, if I say anything bad about developers, I'm not talking about you guys. Those are developers that don't get educated. So these are nice little developer tools. DDL lock timeouter. How many people run some DDL statement and it times out because something else is running? And you're like, oh, you know, last night it didn't work. Well, now Oracle will allow you to wait a certain amount of time and keep trying. Up to an entire, even over a day, actually, with the DDL lock timeout. Which is very, very nice. Allow sequences in PL SQL expressions. So current value and next value. You just have to do a select statement, you know, from dual. Now you just set the value. And some people, you know, I don't know how many different things you've tuned, but sometimes the worst problem people have is I'm like, you know, what's the query? It must be bad. And they're like, well, it's actually select from dual. You know, that's the number one query. I just happen to run it 7 billion times. Well, guess what? For this, don't have to do that anymore. No cursor. Spectacular. Doesn't get any press time, of course, but it's spectacular. Oracle in 10G moved from number and gave you something called PLS integer, where it did things at the hardware level. It went one step further and gave you simple integer, which has a built-in not null, does things at the hardware level. So instead of, you can still use number if you want, but now when we tested it, and this was another million row test that we did, it's roughly half the amount of time that it took with a number. And then there's all kinds of other PL SQL type of packages that are out there. Some of them I cover here. I kind of highlighted them. But just all kinds of things that you could look into as well. How many people use CLOBS, blobs, binary large objects, character large objects? So what happens when you use them in Oracle? Are they super fast? Generally not. They're generally slow. So Oracle started every version trying to make them faster. Finally, in 11G, they said, well, we're done. We're just going to create something new that's fast. And that now fast thing that is replacing them is called secure files. Same thing, just called secure files. Could still use the old, but this is now new. So I'm using RFID, DICOM, medical images, all kinds of different images, whatever it is. I now can store those in the database. Why do I want to put them in the database? Back it up, encrypt it. There's a lot of reasons why you should have it in the database. The only reason people don't is because it's too slow. So now Oracle built high levels of security, but also speed into this. Some people don't store things in the database, and what happens? They end up on the front page. Facebook temporarily loses more than 10% of the photos in hard drive failure. And this story really cracks me up. I hate to say, I mean, Facebook is fine. But this one. You may have noticed in the past day, some photos aren't appearing to display with a question mark. Trying to fully understand what happened. Now, this is on Monday. It happened on Friday. So this is several days later already. But what I like is they say this happened during a routine upgrade. Anyone ever hear of a routine upgrade? Can you use those two words together? Obviously, I don't have flashback, right? They have their home database, home-built database. But if they did have Oracle, they could do flashback. It would have been back in seconds, minutes. They could have stored it online, on disk. This is several days later, and they're saying we're going to get it back in the next few days. how many people their company would allow them to say, oh, your data will be back in 4 or 5 days? Nobody. The performance of secure files, much better than LOBS. 2 times faster when you add new disk space. If you're replacing something, that's where it was really slow, using deleted space, 22 times faster than LOBS. PL/SQL, 6 times faster. So secure files on read performance, really the same as Linux files. Still a little slower on write performance, but approaching that speed. So Oracle fixing the issues related to this so that you can store things securely in the database. How many people use ADDM? Developers call ADDM. A DBA doesn't matter. Why? Because now the developer can tune. I just pull up ADDM. Some enhancements in 11G, global ADM, so it looks across an entire cluster. Emergency ADDM, so I could see who we're waiting on. Bless you. Over a specific time, not tied to a pair of snapshots. So when I look at the first page of Enterprise Manager and I'm at the home, what do I see is ADDM findings. When does that run? Every hour. On the hour. So if you have something else running every hour on there, some people run Stats Pack every hour, you're going to conflict with this, so be careful. You should probably do one or the other. But ADDM will run every hour and tell you what's wrong with your system. And it will tell you how to fix it. Why? Because Oracle knows, whether you know or not, that the world is a global world. That you need to be faster, that you need to be able to manage more, and that's what's going to make you more valuable. So they're giving you a tool to do that. Top ADDM findings, you can see I got a hard parse error, PL/SQL issues. I can click on those, it's a hard parsing issue, and it's telling me what I can do to fix that. Use cursor sharing potentially. If I don't know what it means, I could click on it and see some detailed information. You know, what is a library cache lock? Then sometimes, you know, it's 10 o'clock, and I go to get a cup of coffee, and I come back at 10:05, you know, and the users are like, oh, if you were just here, you know, maybe I come at 10:10, let's say. They say, if you were here a minute ago, it was even worse yet. And you go, well, you know, ADDM runs every hour on the hour, so I'll see you at 11, I'll tell you what's wrong. No, I could run ADDM right now, right? That's just it running. And now I have my findings. Top problem, CPU usage. How many people have seen over the years their top problem is CPU usage? I've been seeing this for years. You know, I figured out how to tune about everything but CPU. The way to do it is you tune the query. But I remember thinking at the moment I saw this the first time, I was like, oh my gosh, Oracle, after all these years, 30 years later, they've harnessed the knowledge of all of Oracle, all the years of experience, and they put it into this product. And I'm going to finally see what they think about when I have this CPU problem. And I remember clicking on it, and I thought, what is their advice? Consider adding more CPUs. I would have never thought of that. If I have a manager and I need more CPUs, I can go, Oracle says, need more CPUs. Now, it actually gives you additional advice, though, how to tune the query and things like that. And then I can also run a report as well on this. But knowing things that Oracle is looking at, like global cache interconnect issues, when I see a CPU usage and Oracle gives me 5 suggestions, knowing which one is the right suggestion, that's where my experience as a DBA comes in. If I have 10 years of experience and I'm using this tool, now all of a sudden I'm spectacular. If I'm not using this tool, maybe somebody with very little experience and this tool is better than me. But with your experience, you will leverage all those years of experience. So I always say ADDM, it's a DBA, does matter. That's what it stands for. And when we look at all the things it looks at, CPU, memory, I/O, SQL, PL/SQL, rack issues, app issues, network hardware issues even, and we'll show some of those. And then within there, if I have the tuning pack, I can use things like SQL Plan Management. SQL Plan Management, I'm doing some update. I'm putting in a new version. I'm changing the version of Oracle, changing the version of my app. New schema, new hardware. Oracle's way of looking at the SQL and see if there's a problem. How many people use stored outlines? Stored outlines are hints. You go, gosh, I should use an index hint. I'll put index hint in there. And I create a stored outline. Oracle internally stores a hint. And you can literally go to the VDOT and see the physical hint there. So that's a stored outline. Oracle now calls those baselines. You can still use stored outlines, but they prefer to use baselines because that's where you're going. The other thing it does is it does a SQL profile, which says, the last time you ran that and we did a full table scan wasn't very good. Let's do it with an index from now on. Then it does an index and it runs really good. And Oracle, and then you say, store that SQL profile. Oracle learns that it's better to use an index. So by build, say it again?
Yeah, we didn't think of permanent now, the profile thing, but in table 4.
Is SQL profile permanent? Does it do it permanently? And the answer is yes. Okay. It does do it permanently in 11G, but you can turn it off. So it's set to true by default in 11G. Why did you find that out?
No,
it was optional in 10.
Yeah, exactly. It does for a lot of lines, but then again, it just goes away.
Sure. And stored outlines are still optional. You still have the choice to do them. So SQL profile, statistical information. How did it run? Should it use an index? Should it not? It takes that into account. Stored outline. Ah, you used a hint? Let's always use one. I think you should use a hint. Let's always use one. So now let's tune something. I go into, once again, top activity. We're at the first screen. We saw top activity was red. Remember that? I said I'm going to click into that. Click into top activity, and I see these spikes. So I slide this rectangle over here, and this rectangle shows me all the SQL associated with this point in time. And Oracle has color-coded it. Literally, it's got green as CPU. If you've done this a lot, dark red, you see a lot of that, concurrency, locking issues, bright red, application issues. So you see these issues that are there, and then this individual SQL literally tells you how much of each resource it's using. It's spectacular. In 11.2, very similar. I just thought I'd do one to show you how it looks. No different from 11.1. And then I say I'd like to do a tuning set. So let me go back. I could pull down this little box and say, create a tuning set from all these SQL statements. So at a point in time, I got a problem, create a tuning set, and I go here, it's got all the select statements that were occurring at that time. And it tells me the statistical information. So this one, which you can't see real good, but it's 2PY something, we could see by the number of memory reads or buffer gets, this thing's killing the box, right? It's you know, millions of reads, disk reads. You know, I'm in over a million disk reads. So I already know this is the problem statement, but I don't see what Oracle does. So I build a SQL tuning set. I give it 30 minutes to figure out an answer. And then Oracle says, if you build a SQL profile, gather statistics, this will run a lot faster. So it's taken my, this statement was like all the way down on the list, now it's moved it up to number one, because it knows it's the problem statement. And then the other ones, it also has some advice. And then I could drill into that given SQL statement and see the statistical information and how it breaks out based on the various components. But then it will say, if you use this SQL profile, it will improve this 99.79%. So it's telling me this thing that used to run in minutes, in this case it was probably 30, 40 minutes, is going to run in seconds, which it did. And it will even give me the explain plan before and after just to make sure I feel okay with it. And you could see in the old one, it used to actually do a couple of hash joins. Hash joins, remember, are in the PGA aggregate. That's where I was talking about where Oracle will join things in memory. And you could see the statistical cost of things as well, just if you want to double check it. Then you could say, oh, I'm going to take that profile and I'm going to store it. So now somebody will say, did you document it? You can say, yeah, we did. You know, I remember talking to Bruce Scott once, and I said, tell me something about Oracle that only you and Bob Miner knew. You know, way back in the early versions, version 2, version 3, he goes, okay, Rich, I'm going to tell you something I never told anybody. He goes, me and Bob, he goes, we never wrote any documentation. And I was like, a developer that didn't write documentation, the world will be astounded by this. He said, well, actually, we had a one-page document. He said, and that was it for the entire database. SQL plan management. So now I can capture these baselines, these stored outlines, and then I can have this. The default is false. You brought up the default is true for profiles, but the default is false to automatically capture this. Once I do capture that, though, using it is true. So Oracle will use them once you have them by default. I can also take them out of the cursor cache. Say it again. What should you set it to? I think it depends on you. I mean, you know, do I want to capture? I mean, it depends how many statements I have. Maybe I don't have the ability to do that. Is it doing a good job on it? I maybe want to build my own and let it use the ones that I've created. Depends how. The more you've tuned, the more likely you'll want it to do more. Then I could also load those plans from the cursor cache. I can load them from a SQL set. There's different examples of this. And then they get purged. If I'm not using them, the default is, after 53 weeks is it purges them. So maybe you want to reset that to something. Here's how you can reset that as well. So what is Oracle doing? Giving me something to tune the problems. Oracle also has probably the better tool, I think, that people use more frequently. The last one was more for individual statements or groups of statements or point in time, but they use the SQL Performance Analyzer more so as they're going to a new version, as they're going to a new version of the app or the database. And basically what this is doing is it's looking before and after some change. Good for all the things we've talked about here, apps, hardware, etc. But the main thing is it's capturing a group of SQL. It will move that SQL to a different system if you want, and then it will replay that. And it will compare the before and after so you can see it. So here's an example. I click, I'm once again in this top activity, and I say, well, you know what? I'm going to go right to SQL Performance Analyzer. And then I have choices here. One is a guided workflow where I say, here's what I'm going to do. One is a parameter change. You know, somebody goes, well, if you just increase the shared pool, now I could actually do a parameter change and look at it, higher shared pool, lower shared pool, right? Compare it. And then one's an optimizer upgrade. You know, here's version 10, version 11. Let's compare it. So I'm going to do a guided workflow, and Oracle gives you step-by-step guided workflow, and it says, okay, what do you want to use? And I used my same SQL tuning set here. I grab that tuning set, then I go through that, and Oracle will compare it now that it's tuning, and it says, your SQL that you've tuned, and I remember I tuned it using the Oracle's tools directly, and it made that one query very fast. But Oracle says, well, if we do a guided workflow, it's going to be much faster. And the reason why is because it tunes that one real slow statement very fast. And in fact, only one statement has been improved. Most of them are unchanged. But the improvement, the amount of time, has gone down a lot. Why? Because Oracle specifically tuned that with the SQL profile itself, going through a guided workflow. And I said, well, what if I just upgrade? Will it be as fast? So I go through the same steps, but now this time, I'm doing an upgrade comparing 10.202 to 11.106. I want to see, well, just a straight upgrade fix it. And now if we look, the time differential, not as good. But it fixed a lot of statements. But it didn't fix that one. So combining the upgrade with me tuning the real bad statement is the best option. There's also an 11GR2, a way I could notice there was only three of these before, now there's five. The new ones they added is now I can go version 9 to 10 and compare 9 to 10. So not only 10 to 11, but also 9 to 10, because they found out a lot of people are still on 9. And then I can do an Exadata simulation. Is it going to run faster on Exadata? Now, my thought was, you know, no matter what it is, Oracle's going to say it's faster on Exadata, right? So I figured I'm going to choose something that it's already fast. I'm going to see if Oracle says it's faster. So I went through and I added a SQL set that I thought would be the same on one or the other. And here they actually show you the PL SQL they're going to run. I build a packet, a job to run, and then it compares it, and it actually showed me before and after, same thing. Unchanged, all my statements. I was shocked. I was sure it was going to tell me that I need Exadata. But actually, I had something very small, and it said you don't. And that was good. That was actually the most positive news I saw. When I look at Exadata, you look at Oracle and how fast they've been moving, and I always tell people they're dominant. Teach your kids Oracle because it's that dominant. Nobody is going to catch them because I know how they are on the inside, and you got to do things for years and decades. But then I saw Exadata, and I saw a paradigm shift. So as fast as Oracle was going, they literally started accelerating to an incredible degree with Exadata. And what they're doing is they're now implementing hardware. So we had database, we're going so fast, we have all these different things. Now, we're going to take Sun, and we're going to go even faster. And when we look at, how many people have never seen Exadata? So when you walk out of here, you're going to look at an Exadata box, it will never look the same to you. Because you'll say, oh, I understand it. I have this talk a little bit later, Exadata, in the Exadata user group, Sid. Are you going to send that out to everybody? But if you want to know more about Exadata, I was going to say, here's the actual talk. Notice, it's easy. So you want to learn about Exadata 101, Easy Street. And I'll go through all the things that make Exadata fast. So this takes a good hour. So I'm not going to go through it today, but just to let you know, there is another presentation on that, should you want to see that one. I do it on December 1st on the Exadata SIG. So now let's look at Oracle. So first of all, Exadata is a Sunbox, and these are hard drives. 1, 2, 3 times 4, 12 disks, right? So I have 12 of these in each little slot here. So I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 slots up here, 7 slots down here full of disks. Then here I have servers, actual Sun servers, 4170s to be exact. I have 8 compute servers, and they have their own little disks also. And then they have a CD-ROM here, which I'm yet to see one that actually has a CD-ROM. I just see the slot, never a CD-ROM there. But how do you put data here is they have USBs. These are 2 little USBs. So I have 4 here and 4 here. So I have 8 compute servers. So basically, what do I have? I have an 8-node rack inside a box with 168 disks. Which is 100 terabytes if I use SAS, high-speed storage, or SATA, kind of low-speed storage, kind of like a 33 or a 45, right? And then I have flash storage, which is solid-state disk. And I have 5 terabytes of that, which is more than most Fortune 1000 databases. So most Fortune 1000 databases would easily fit into the flash storage. This is on the hardware before you get to the compute server. So Oracle does a lot of operations here before you even get to the rack cluster. So now Oracle becomes much faster. And then it has this InfiniBand network, which is extremely fast, 40 gigs per second each direction, which is 80 gigs total. And then Oracle has built a faster box yet. We'll see that in a second. But basically, these are 2 CPU sockets, 4 cores, 64 cores, 8 servers with 0.5 terabyte of DRAM. Then the storage servers have another 1/3 of terabyte, so almost 1 terabyte of DRAM, which is the super fast memory. Most databases will fit in memory. Not to mention they have this compression, so everything's really much smaller. You'll see compression in a little bit, I'll show it. Then they have 5 terabytes of flash storage. And then on the servers, they also have additional CPUs, another 112 cores. Oh, just to get things real fast out of the storage, we've got all these. I think they learned something from EMC here. So what happened? How fast is this box? Well, here. Ever want to know where Oracle's going? All you got to do is look at Oracle magazine and see what's on the cover. Exadata. That's where they're going. You go on a. You should listen to Oracle financial calls. Larry Ellison's on them. He will tell you where Oracle is going as a company. I picked this up just because I was interested in the cover story, having been to China. But then I looked at the back, and it was Exadata. Headline, stunning. That's what somebody's reacting to. I have not heard anybody who is running Exadata that doesn't say it's unreal. They never say it's fast. They never say it's pretty good. They always say it's way beyond anything we ever thought it would be. We have no performance. I literally ask them, do you want me to come out and tune anything? They're like, no, I don't need anything. It's that fast. It's that stunning. That's a little bit pricey, maybe. So that's the downside, maybe. But why is it fast? Because it takes 10 terabytes of data. And then it does compression down to 1 terabyte. So maybe 10 times compression. And that's only one of the compressions. There's actually even better compression than that. Then it does partition at the storage server level. So before you get to the server where you'd usually do partition, it's doing it back at the storage. Oh, before you even get out of the disk, we'll take care of that for you. And oh, by the way, we'll do a couple of things that you don't have to do anything for. We'll just automatically do them. And we're looking at high and low values called storage indexes and smart scans. And so it builds indexes, then also the smart scans. Like maybe there's 50 columns, and it says, well, you don't need all 50. You just need 2. So we're not, when you come out of the storage, we're not even going to take the other 48. So Oracle is taking that and limiting it to 1/2000th the data that it used to do. So now you have this half a terabyte of DRAM, and guess what? 1/2000th of the data is even getting there. So you can easily keep things in memory. So they're moving to a memory resident database by giving you a box that's big enough for it, but in addition to that, it's shrinking what you're looking at tremendously. And that's why this box is stunning. Use Enterprise Manager, you could also look at Exadata. Looking at all targets, looking at the InfiniBand here, I'm looking at the cluster database here, the different nodes, the actual servers. I'm looking at the storage servers, the disks. And then it gives me things like offload efficiency. How much of what I'm doing is being offloaded by the storage cells even before it gets to the database, even before it gets to the servers? And it's finding that out for me. So things at the what's called the storage is the cell level. And then it gives you that in report format. Tells you how much your offload efficiency. I'm not going to go into this in detail. I put it here just in case you want to download this. Yeah?
Is that the Twinny Pack or is that covered Exadata?
This is the Exadata plugin. Yes. And the slide you're looking at here is actually a later version they gave me for the 11G book. So if you have Exadata now and you haven't seen these, that's because it's coming. So saw it here first. And then here's on the various disks. If I use ASM, I could look at the ASM disk groups and so on. And then I could still go down to the node-to-node global cache and how things are being moved between the nodes as well. So that's my pitch on Exadata. It's that impressive. I probably spend more time on Exadata than I've spent on anything else. I came out here to look at Exadata. The last time I worked on Exadata, I'll tell you, it was absolutely spectacular. And some of those you'll see in the webcast. If you go to it, I'll show some of the offload efficiency that it's doing back at the storage server. But it's impressive.
Okay, I have a question.
Speed-wise, yes.
On the Exadata, is there any particular queries that work better than others? I mean, obviously,
are there any queries on Exadata that work better than others? Well, definitely. Ones that you have a lot of partitioning, you partition well. Things that you've compressed more. Things that have high and low values, lots of high and low values, so it can eliminate blocks. Things that you're doing select statements and you're not going to all the columns. So where you're using these type of benefits, that's where it's going to be most beneficial. Does that answer that? Okay, so now let's go back into 11G, some of the advisors that I think are also. We looked at some of the tuning. There's also repair advisors. But before we go there, I'm going to go look at some of the structural ones. In 11GR2, same ones you'll see as well. Slightly different, though, under the repair advisors, and 11GR2 is they have a lot of nice integrity checks that they didn't have, or that I didn't see, where you can look at and do block integrity checks, which is quite nice. But some of the other advisors, SQL Access or Partition Advisor, structural things. So I've been looking at tuning things. Now, let Oracle tell me how to slice and dice things. So it's giving me structural advice now. What are my partitioning needs? It will give me indexing type of advice as well. It'll check indexes, materialized view, partitions, and so on. So here's an example, once again, step by step. I could give it some tuning set that I built, and then I could say, I want you to look for indexes and partitioning, but not materialized views. So I could specify what I would like it to look at structurally and advise me. And then here I'm just setting up the job itself. The job is running. Job is submitted and running. Now it'll show me if I've improved I/O and query execution time improvement. So once again, structural. Another advisor, which I think is really, really nice, is called the repair advisor. You know, I spoke in China, and you speak, and then they translate, and then people react. But I go, Aura 600, the whole car, Aura 600. Oh. It's like instantaneous. No translation necessary. It's like, yep, DBA in China, same as DBA in America. So Oracle knows you get Aura 600. You know what? What is an Aura 600? I've gone through the code. It's not this. It's not this. It's not this. It's not. Get to the last line of code. Haven't found it. Aura 600. It's what it is. We don't know what it is. I'll give you the line and all where the issue happened, but we don't have something that tells us what it is. That's what it is. But Oracle now knows this is a problem. And it says, we're going to give you a way to fix this without even calling us. It's going to be this repair advisor that will go through compilation, execution, and go some other route, do the same thing but in a different order that may solve your problem. Here's an example. I go to a database instance, and I see on my alerts I have an Aura 600. I'm like, oh. So I click into that, and I see the issue here. Drill into the Aura 600, and there's, as usual, absolutely no information at all. This is when your manager's there, and you're like, well, what is it? And you're like, Aura 600, and they're like, what's that mean? And you're like, it's a 13011. I'm going to dig into that, and I have no other information to say anything about it. Right? So now I could click on it and say, is there a patch out there to go around this? And they find one. And that's nice, but even nicer is Oracle will say, the patch that goes around it, how much would this have taken without it, and how much does it take with it? So it actually looks at before and after. So it looks, is this much, much slower? You want to know. This one was sub-second either way, so it's very fast. And then I can apply that patch at this point. One, the next level of, we looked at taking a group pieces of SQL. What about our entire database? What are people fearful of? I'm moving my database to the new version. Is it going to be as fast? Is it going to work? Am I going to get errors? So Oracle said, I'm building a new tool, real application testing. Anyone know who this is? Who is it? Close. It's the other guy, Bobby Fischer. So that's when he first won the world. Look at the guy's face. I always say, look at Bobby Fischer. Look at that. If I sat down to play this guy, you sit down to play him, you're like, I'm going to lose. You just see it in his eyes. He's like, no, I don't want to beat you at chess. I want to absolutely crush you into oblivion. I want you to know how bad you are. Do you have this kind of concentration when you're working? That's your job. This was his job, and he's doing it well. Do you have that same intensity? That's important. And then he came back, and people were like, oh, he's all washed up, haven't seen him, he's homeless. And he came back, and he played again, same guy, won again. Database workload capture and replay. Capture the workload of the entire system, put it on a new system, put it on a new version, replay the whole thing. So let's go one. Well, there are some things different. You can make some 11G changes before you rerun it as well. But basically, you're going, well, it's Monday, 8 a.m., and I'm going to move my backup over to here, and I'll recover it. so that this system is Monday at 8 a.m. Then I'm going to start applying transactions till Friday, let's say 5 o'clock, right? Then I'm going to move the tape over here, and I'm going to see, is this 11G system as fast as this one? Is it faster? So now I can replay everything in a row. Anyone use this yet? It's very good. It's a little cumbersome to use, in my opinion, but it's very good. So here's an example. I do database replay. The capture gives me step-by-step instructions, tells me what I'm capturing. I create a job. It asks me, you know, do I want to have things like Enterprise Manager captured as well, or do I want to eliminate that? We go through the different steps. It says, okay, you've captured this. And it will tell you. Now, optionally export the AWR, replay, put on the replay system, make any changes you want, copy everything, etc. Then it does pre-process on the new system. Where is this new system? What's the login for the new system? Sets all that up. And then it will actually tell me, you know, are there any jobs that are going outside? So maybe you're doing credit card authorization. You know, you did a week's worth of orders. You don't want to do like replay and, you know, charge everybody again on your replay system. You want to test it. So it actually gives you some nice suggestions to make sure you don't do that. But here's an example. I'm going into replay now. And it will say, you know, replaying workload with unresolved references, you know, you don't want to charge the credit card, may affect your production environment. Make sure you have all that set up. Then I do the replay. And then it will start to give me these comparisons of capture and replay. Is it faster, slower? I can do it with exact concurrency. You know, this happened at 5 o'clock. I want it to happen at 5 o'clock on the replay system. Or I could say, no, if this one's running faster, well, then do it faster. So I can either synchronize it completely or unsynchronize it, depending on what I want to do, which is very, very nice. And it'll tell you if there's any errors, performance problems, etc. It's very, very nice. 11GR2 really looked the same to me. I took some screens there, screenshots of 11GR2 also. Something else new in 11GR2, adding nodes. I just put it kind of FYI here, but I always remember people at Oracle used to go, oh, add a node, it's a couple of steps. I'm like, well, not really. They're like, oh, no, a couple of steps. So now they have adding nodes. And I'm like, okay, let's see how many steps it is. Feels like a lot of steps to me. And it's like adding a node. And then it starts to give you all these. I choose to add a node. It starts to give me all these sets, all the SSH command executing this. And I scroll down a little. Oh, now we're creating the directory, setting up the permission, the different checks, enough installing. All this, configuring the homes, etc., 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 installing all these packages, up and all the da-da-da-da. Oh, and the cleanup. Don't forget that if you need to reinstall, big problem. And I'm like, yeah, it's not just a couple of steps. Isn't it nice they're doing it for me now, though? So that's nice. In 11, GR2 only. Next thing in 11G, how many people use partitioning? So you're going to see the five-second review if you don't know what partitioning is. The short answer is, you know, splitting a table into little pieces. How many people have like one really large table you got to go to and it's like so slow? And then you go select star from dual and you go, wow, it's so fast because it's so small. Partitioning is just breaking your big table into small tables. Oracle has all these different partitioning, but also each partitioning with each other. So different partitioning, I can slice and dice it multiple ways. So some databases, I might have some of these, but not all of them. But very few of them do they have the combination that you could do as you do with Oracle. And I would hesitate to say some of them will have to be rewritten to actually do some of those combinations. So they're very far ahead there. But something I always hated all the way back to version 8 when they came up with the range partition, is I'd say, well, give me a partition, department number, less than 10, less than 20, and then I had to have this max value. You know, I couldn't like say less than 30, oh, and if I put in a 40, you know, throw in another partition. No. Hey, what would it do? If I added something outside there, it would error out. So now Oracle is fixing that in 11. We'll see in a minute. So here I'm putting these into the various partitions. Then I also have range partitioning, multi-column. You know, I have you know, day, month, and year. So quarter by quarter, I don't want it just maybe year to year or month to month, but a combination of columns. So now they gave me multi-column. That was 10G. Then I had hash partitioning since ADA. That's you know, I don't know what partitioning is. I don't know what to partition on. I have no idea. But break it into a lot of pieces, because that seems to work for every other DBA. So hash partitioning was if you have values like, say, an account number, you know, where the number is sequential and it is kind of evenly distributed in a way, you could say break it, and it has to be a power of 2 to make it more efficient. But I pick a power of 2, I just say break it into 4 equal size pieces, and Oracle will do it for me. That's, I have no idea, figure it out for me. Then I have composite partitioning. Now, this is range partitioning. I have sub-partitioning. Different tape. This is the one where people go, you know, I'm worried they're going to get rid of me. And I'm like, you need composite partitioning. Your boss sees this stuff you're writing, they're like, they'll never get rid of you. And then list partitioning. By values. East, Boston, New York. So based on the values that are in there. So now in 11G, Oracle has interval partitioning. And just to make it easy, it's, I forgot to do max value. Well, the old way, I get Oracle error. In the new version, well, we'll see it in a minute, but let's say I have 3 partitionings. D1, D2, D3, what do you think the next one should be? D4, I would have thought, but, you know, we'll see. So I go, okay, interval 10. I'm going to throw one more in. I'll see what Oracle comes up with. I'm actually going to throw some more in on the next page. 50, 99. And then I'm going to select in my D1, D2, D3, SysP41. That's exactly what I would have called it. I don't know. So okay. But hey, no error, right? Isn't that nice? Oracle also has, I won't cover this, reference partitioning. So I have a parent-child relationship. Something to know about partitioning is it costs me more space. There's an overhead cost space-wise to partitioning. With equipartition, is one where a reference partition actually goes down because Oracle will take tables with parent-child relationships, they equipartition, and they take the partitioning key from the parent so that you don't need it in the child table. It's actually save space. And this is just an example. You can download this if you want to see it, exactly how it goes. Something else they did in 11G, you can compress individual partitions. Usually this is 1 to 3 times compression, maybe. Your mileage will vary. But now I can say compress the whole table, but this partition, don't compress it. Sometimes if you compress a partition, it gets so small, it's very fast to scan, and you get your answer much faster. Sometimes compression, the overhead of compression and uncompressing it, is that like my warning? 5 minutes, lights are flashing. Sometimes not compressing it is faster. So usually, you know, the most recent quarter, people will not compress. Then they'll compress the older ones. But sometimes, if it can shrink it down a lot, the amount you scan is so small that it's much faster to be compressed. And here's just an example. I'm inserting it, and I go to DBA tab partitions and notice the one, whether it's compressed or not compressed, it shows. There's also advanced compressing. It's just kind of FYI, 8i you had index, and you had table in 9i. But you had to recompress and reorganize things. And then in 11G advanced compression, they actually would update the block even as you change things, and at a period of time it would recompress at the block level, which is very, very nice. And then I have what's called hybrid columnar compression. I'll see a little bit in a second. And this is just some more on advanced compression and how it works. And then we did a test case just to see what the compression percentage was. You know, and it's not bad. But when you see hybrid columnar compression, you'll go, it's a lot better. And once again, advanced compression at the block level. Now with Exadata, I had version 1, which is the HP hardware, and then I went to Exadata 2, which is Sun hardware. How many? If you had HP hardware, you had version 1, how do you get to version 2? What's my upgrade path? Oh, you need to buy Sun. Okay. interesting how that works. Hybrid columnar compression. Now, I have what in warehouse compression. When we test this, we got 4 to 11 times compression. Well, that's a lot better than 3 times. If I do archive compression, you can get up to 70 times, Oracle says. We got 32. So think of, you know, you have a 32 terabyte table, all of a sudden it's in 1 terabyte. Think of the storage savings alone. So one of the big advantages to Exadata is you're saving so much money on storage because of the compression. You were paying for 100 terabytes, you're only paying for 10 terabytes. So it's a big difference. So there you can definitely do a cost comparison there. But Oracle has this hybrid columnar compression. And if you want to know more about this, you got to see the Exadata class. But basically, it's building a compression unit with multiple blocks. And then each column, this column 1, 2, 3, 4. And this column 1 has multiple column 1, so multiple records. So let's say I have, you know, maybe department number in column 1. You know, it's department number 1, 1, 1, 5. Or let me give you a better example. Let's say I have individual people. You know, your social security number, and then I get your name, your address, phone number, maybe some other information, and then I store that record. Let's say here. Then I get the next person. Oh, user 2, social security number, etc. And I store it all. And maybe after about 10 or 20 records, well, I can't fit any more records. Well, what happens when I just want to search on social security number? Well, I can only look at that many records in each block because it has all the other name, address, and everything else. So columnar compression, databases like a Teradata, Netezza, said, well, we'll make our database faster than Oracle. We'll do columnar storage, not compression, columnar storage. So what that is I'm going to have a block and all it's going to have in it is account number. And so all the account numbers will be together and maybe I'll fit 5,000 of them. So when I'm looking for something by account number, it'll find it very, very fast. Now when I want all the other data, it's not so fast. When I want to change things, not so fast. So Oracle said, yeah, that was a great sales strategy, but in reality, people really do need to change things from time to time. So they built one where they had this columnar storage, but only a group of records. And they put it into several blocks. So that's what's called hybrid columnar compression. And basically they look at this compressed data in the flash cache at the storage level before it gets to the database server, compressed even when they put it over the InfiniBand. When you clone it, it's compressed. You back it up compressed. Scan a lot less data because you're scanning it compressed. So scanning maybe 1/10 the data. Fully supports all the things you're used to it supporting. B-tree indexes, partitioning, bitmap, etc. Future logical standby. And then they do smart scans as well. So the next level, paradigm shift. Other kinds of compression, don't forget, you still have data pump compression, RMAN, secure file, all kinds of other compression. It's more stuff that you get with Oracle. That's it on compression. So now object maintenance. Somebody says, well, I need some other tool to manage Oracle day-to-day. And Oracle has a full tool to do all that kind of stuff. I'm not going to go through it in detail. Oracle also has something called a lot of automated things, rather, statistics collection, segmented by your SQL 2. All these things where Oracle has automated things so that you don't have to do them, one of which I'll cover a little bit later. And then some additional, if you have materialized view logs, it can now be redefined online. Nice for people that have that. Large-scale data warehouses. What are people using in a large-scale data warehouse? Partitioning. So if you're not using it, you're not with the 100%. Parallel. Compression, materialized view. I thought it was interesting. RMAN is like backup. Data warehouse? We don't need to back it up. And then notice this is an Oracle survey, though. I thought, well, it's an Oracle survey, and all the things that cost money are at the top. That's interesting. They also have an ADR, which is all the different storage of how Oracle is storing things in the database, so that when they want to help you, automatically, when you load the database in 11G, everything's in the right place that they're expecting it to be. which is kind of nice. And this is just an 11. If you do a select statement, there's an 11 GR2, same thing. The last subject, second to last maybe. Optimizer statistics and advances there. So Oracle has improved the speed by, people find that, you know, when I do a compute with statistics, kind of slow but very good. What if I had a way where the compute was as fast as doing a sample size? So Oracle built something called auto sampling, which gives you both of these. They also gave you stats by a partition. So in 10G, if I gather stats on a partition after I do a bulk load, it would scan all the partitions. Now it just scans the touch partitions only, which is nice. I can now gather stats and make them pending. You know, I gather stats, what happens? Performance goes bad. Now I can gather stats and then look at them. If everything looks okay, I run some queries maybe that I think are a problem or could be a problem, then I could publish it at that point. And this is just an example of that. I select the publish, it's default true. I set it to false. Then I select from my table, I have no stats there. I do a gather stats, still not there, no stats. Then I say, well, use the pending statistics. Then I can run my queries, and if they work well, then I'll do the publish. And then people will see the stats. So very nice. They also gave me multi-column statistics. You know, the season is affecting how much I'm selling. In the winter, I'm selling more skis, more winter coats. In the summer, I'm selling more swimsuits, right? So Oracle says, is there a way to combine the season with the item? So now I have something called multi-column statistics. I'm looking, here's an example where I'm looking for Corvettes, and it limits it down to just three records. Then I say, and the color is red. Well, limited it down some more. So it was still helpful. But what if I said a Corvette and the price is $50,000? Well, now, well, a Corvette was enough. The $50,000 didn't help me. So if I had multi-column statistics, it would know, well, I need this, but these two together, I don't need the other one. So a way to gather groups of columns and combine them together when I do stats. And here's just an example of how to do it. I'm going to combine country ID and state province together. What do you think they should call the new column? So we're going to have, you know, here's column and here's number of distinct and the number of distinct provinces. When they put it together, what should they call the new column? Country, state, province, something like that, right? I think. That's my thought. So I create this extended statistics on country ID, state, province, and there's the name. Sys Studer Gerler for U.S. I pound four. Of course. I did this on multiple versions. Same answer. Hey, we could, nice if you want to rest a little, take your time. So now when I do a select, there it is. I have my new column. And I could see the number of distinct is really the same as province. So this additional column with those two together is not helping me in this case. But now I could see I've added, very clearly I could tell which columns that is. And if I don't want it, because it wasn't helpful to me, I could do a drop in this case. And now I'm back to normal. So what does Oracle do? It's kind of this artificial intelligence, futuristic way of tuning things that you should be using. Adaptive cursor sharing. How many people turn off bind peaking? If you have very high volume databases where you're running the same statement, it's, you know, millions of transactions per couple of minutes. This is very, very important. But what Oracle will do is it will look, let's say you were running a query, you said where job equals president. And they said, oh, you should use an index. Oracle will go, oh, use an index. And the next time you run it and you go job equals operator, it says, oh, I already know what you want to use. You want to use an index. It peeks ahead, which is not a good idea in this case because maybe most people are operators. So peeking ahead could be a problem. So what you could do is set, turn that peeking off. In Oracle 11, though, Oracle now fixes this so that based, let's say I have all these operators and a president. Oracle looks for operators up, should be a full table scan. But when I only look for president, should be an index. So it actually will compare the two and understand when it should peek ahead and when it shouldn't. So it's called bind-aware cursor matching. And you can actually query it in BDollar SQL CS statistics and see the number of executions and whether it peaked or not. But very, very nice in a high-volume database. And you can go to VDollar SQL and actually look and see if certain values are bind sensitive or bind aware. And then there's many more options in grid control. If you've never seen this before, you can look at all your different targets. Maybe you can put all your production databases there. You can look ASM, listeners, enterprise manager, databases, clusters, etc. Here I have a cluster database, a database, and so on. And then here was my home page. I'm looking at a given cluster database. I scroll down. I could see the alerts. Scroll down, see the six nodes, six instances that are making up the six nodes of this cluster. Here's the topology. You can see all six of them, each database, each listener. 11GR2, really looked the same. I took some screenshots in case you wanted to see what was out there. If you don't have 11G, I'm not going to go through it. It does have a couple of other options. We probably don't have enough time to go through, but one of them that's kind of cool is there's an option where you could say, this is hot data. Move it to the outer part of the disk, and Oracle will literally move the hot data that you've specified to the outside, which is kind of nice. And here's some more screenshots. I think this is it here, actually. Here's the regions. The regions, primary and minor extents, primary hot or cold. So this is where I can specify that as well. Then the last thing, security. Is this your security? You know, look at the security gate here. Is it working? This is a helicopter pad. Probably shouldn't be going around. This security, now people are listening here. This is in Vegas. I don't mess around. I'm going to carry a shotgun right here. Security in 11G, more restrictive in every way. Passwords, case sensitive now. This kills me every time. Yeah, logging on, I'm like, gosh, I know it's Scott Tiger. It's only my test database. Why would I change it? I'm in the wrong case. Strong passwords. Audit trail on by default. So people do create user, create session, drop user, alter. You should be tracking this. Oracle's been telling you for years to track it. Nobody does. So they're like, okay, by default, we'll just put it on. You probably won't turn it off. So when you do have a problem, guess what? We're checking for you. And other things worth noting, here's how you turn it off if you want to turn off case-sensitive login. I don't know if I should show people that. Oracle is not just secure. It is based on security, because it's done so much work in the government since the beginning. So no matter what government you are around the world, Oracle has built things in to make you secure as a country. Other 11GR2 features, parallel execution works now, ASMFS, a few things. I won't go through them all. I know we're running a little late. Here's some upgrade studies. A university moved from 9.2 to 11.1, about 20,000 users, 30% more logon, response time 50% lower. Also moved to RAC and ASM. What did they use? SQL Tuning Advisor and Performance Analyzer to fix. They only had 94 queries that were a problem moving from version to version. Here's one, 9.2 to 11.1. Change parameters to 11G, that helped them 15%, system stats 7%, Performance Analyzer, 18%. Profiling, 8%. So they tell you the different pieces that are making up the gain that they've had. And then I always say Oracle's best feature is how much you could fit in it. 16-bit, Oracle had way back in the mid-90s. How much data can you look at in memory with 16-bit? Does anyone know? There's 16-bit, 64-bit. Sorry. 64-bit, yeah, big difference. 64-bit, they've had it since the 90s. And the answer is 16 exabytes. So memory resident, you could have 16 million terabytes of information, which I've estimated to be pretty much every database in the world. You could fit into a single Oracle database, which fits 8 exabytes in an Oracle database, memory resident. Right now, if the hardware was just faster, which Oracle's working on. So there's addressable memory. That's what they tell me. 530 million miles of bookshelves, library count. It's only 10 terabytes. Nothing. Right? This is what they tell me. So then I've calculated all the databases. The largest 1 million companies would fit in about 3 exabytes. That's their primary database. That's not every video, audio, all that. This is what they're storing in their corporate databases. You could fit it in one Oracle database and have an online backup in the database, and it would fit. Things are moving faster. Number of years to reach 50 billion users. Radio, 35 plus years. TV, 12 years. Cable, 10 years. Internet, 5. Wireless, 1 year. I always tell people, it's like the event. Anyone know what the event horizon is? You're like driving near a black hole and you're like, I mean, this is given that you have a spaceship. But you're out in space driving near a black hole and you're like, wow, that looks kind of cool. Let me get a closer look. And you hit the event horizon and it starts pulling you in faster, faster, faster. We're hitting this event horizon. Some of you are like, oh, recession, things are slowing down. I'm like, not in technology. It's not slowing down. It's accelerating to an exponential degree. The ability to do things is already there. It's just a matter of, will you implement it? Thought I'd throw that in there. This is one of our salespeople. You know, as we're going through this, I remember reading something. It was like, one out of every three people is mentally unstable. And I was like, one out of every three people? No way. They're like, don't believe us? And I'm like, I don't think so. They're like, think of two people you know. So I thought of my two partners, Brad and Joe. It's like, are they crazy? And I'm like, no. It's like, if it's not them, it must be you. I remember we're on this stock channel. Me and Joe were on this stock market observer. And the guy, I kept calling the guy a week before, a day before, 5 hours before. The guy would never call me back. I'm like, what is the show about? Is he going to tell me? He's like, oh, he'll call you. Never called me. I finally get on the show and I'm like, I sit down and I'm like, are you going to tell me what, you know, I need to prepare a little. And he's like, oh, no, no, we'll go through it. Hooks up the mic and he's like, hi, this is Jack Taylor. I'm with Rich Nemec. Tell me about Tusk. And I'm sitting there thinking, you've got to be kidding. So after the show, I'm like, Jack, what are you doing? I go, does anyone ever not say anything when you do that to them? He goes, I like it to be fresh. He goes, but there was a guy once that, he said, I got him on there and he had that deer in the headlights look. And I go, well, what'd you do? He goes, I started asking him other questions. I said, what did you have for lunch? He said, and finally the guy spoke. He goes, I don't know what I had, but you're about to see it. So then later, I'm on another TV show, and I'm like, I need to know what this show is about. And they don't tell me a month before, a week before, 2 days before. I'm calling every day. They're like, stop bugging us. I get to the TV studio. I'm waiting there in the side room. Then finally, it's like 5 minutes before. And now I could see they're getting word. And I'm like, huh, shoes on the other foot. And I'm like, what's the problem? They're like, the host isn't here yet. And I'm like, wow. And they go, and then finally I see him through a window. And this is, no kidding. This guy's on the phone. And I'm like, they're like, he wants to talk to you. I'm like, okay, he's finally talking to me. Great. I get on the phone and he goes, I'm not going to make it. He goes, can you do the show without me? I'm like, I don't even know what the show is about. And he goes, oh, no, just go with it. It's about technology. Just, you know, run with it. So then they take me back to this seat in front of the camera, and I'm like, I don't know if I feel comfortable with this. I go, let us know now. We're either going to put in a tape or you're running with this show. And I remember in the Marines, they'd always tell me there's a fine line between bravery and stupidity. Never cross that line. And I thought, boy, this is that line. I'm right there. So I do the show. I get done. The guy had said he saw some talk I did on leadership, so I kind of did something on that. I get done with the show. I walk out. They call me like 2 weeks later. They're like, or my assistant actually called me and said, these guys keep calling. They want you to do the show. And I'm like, okay, find out what it's about. She goes, no, they want you to host the show. And I'm all right. I said, okay, I will host the show, but they need to at least tell me what the show is supposed to be about. But what is that a result of? It's a result of this. It's this. It's things accelerating. It's not going to slow down in your area. You just have to go with it sometimes. Globalization is going to happen. When I went to China, they were like, what do you want to see? The Great Wall, the hidden, the gardens and all this. I was like, you know, I want to see all that, but I want to see Walmart. They're like, Walmart? And I'm like, yeah. And they wouldn't take me. And they said, I'm going to walk to Walmart if you don't take me. So I go to Walmart. They finally took me. They're like, why do you want to go to Walmart? I go, I want to see if anything's made in America. Do we make anything that's worth it in China to be there? And they had one thing that was made in America. It was Raid Bug Killer. And I was thinking, kills bugs dead even in China. But as we look at the various pieces, these are the things that Mark Hansen would say, or Milton Friedman rather, he said, when these six things align, it will be hard to tell one country from the other.
Thomas Friedman,
thank you. Yes. Thomas Friedman. Milton Friedman was the long time ago predecessor. Very good economist too. His name is here on the other book, The World is Flat. But when we look at this, and we look at somebody like Canada, we go politics, culture, technology, finance. A lot of these are already aligned, and it's not so much difference when you go to Toronto. But if I go to China, it's a lot more different because the politics are different. But when I go in the corporate world, and I did, and I spoke at several corporations, it was very similar. Or a 600. DBA, very same mentality. So some things are aligning, some are not. Then if you go to India, you know, I need to make a call, here you go. I still don't know what the big phone is for. Anyone know what the big phone's for?
It's like one of those credit cards.
We could slide a card through? I don't know. But it's just interesting. I mean, it's capitalism at its finest. Then when I went to China, kind of a long story, but finally when I got to the presentation, I was running late because the plane was late and all this, and then I had to get there, and I finally get there, and I'm huffing and puffing. I get in the room, and I'm like, wow, it's in Chinese. Somehow I didn't expect that. So I go to the next slide. I go, hey, the next slide is in English. And it wasn't. I was like, okay. So then later that weekend, I took a walk in the park with my wife, and somebody showed up from the press. Hello, we'd like to interview you. And I'm like, how did you know I was here? I think it's like Rich Nemec attempts to use chopsticks. Nice try, pal. From Chicago, obviously. But when I look at Oracle, it's not slowing down. There's more that you can do in the database. The impact that you used to be able to make, all the tuning features, I used to show people, you could take, instead of looking at 5 terabytes, you could look at 9 gigs if you employ all of these tuning features. Well, guess what? Oracle and Exadata said, I'm not waiting for you anymore. I'm doing this for you now. I'm going to give you some automatic tuning things. I'll help you to tune things faster. And so they started doing that. And then when you looked at this and you say, I got all these disks and everything, I remember going, well, that's the Oracle, the Sunfire 4170. And I thought, well, they have a faster server, the 4800. And this is Oracle Exadata, just come out. It's been only a few months. And I thought, I'll bet they're going to get this thing out there and it's going to even be faster. And lo and behold, I go to Open World months later, and they've already got a faster box. Now it's 128 cores, twice as many CPUs, 2 terabytes of DRAM, same storage. So here's a new box, X2-8. The original one was X2-2. So now Oracle and their acceleration they've always had in the database world, they're applying it to the Sun world. Sun, I guarantee you, this box after the last, it would have been like 5 years, 7 years. And they would have said, okay, we've got a new box. Now 2 terabytes of DRAM. Oracle's like 6 months. Boom, new one. Not good enough? Oh, guess what? We just came out with another box. Elastic Cloud. Notice, remember these 4x3x4 disks? Now you see the disks are Oops. Here instead. See, look. See all the disks are here, and here's the servers. Now Oracle said, oh, we're going to put the disks here and have a lot of servers. So they kind of swapped the storage and the servers. Now a lot of servers, a little bit of storage. For people that have, you know, things on the web, for the cloud, cloud computing. So now they have this 360 CPUs, 2.8 terabytes of DRAM, terabyte of FlashFire, only 40 terabytes of SAS. But basically, Facebook could fit on two of these with 500 million people. So you know Larry was sitting down one day and going, hey, what if we swap these for a different type of application? Perfect. $1 million, $1 million, I like it. Son, this would have been like 14 years later. Oracle, a couple of months later. Paradigm shift. Oracle's now in the hardware world. When I look at Oracle, 30 plus years, 33 years or so now, great database, apps leader, BI leader, already in the lead. Got all the financial, I mean, it's game over. Nobody's going to catch them in your lifetime. I always said Larry Ellison, genius behind Oracle the company. Bob Miner, genius behind Oracle the product. So we looked at all these things. I won't go into detail. This was in Vegas. Ring up three tusks. For more information, probably 400 people contributed to this tuning book. So it truly is highly beneficial if you haven't read it. This is the quote I do if you want to write a book. If you're going through hell, keep going. When you're in a recession, this is what you remember. Going through hell, keep going. Don't stop. Want the Chinese version? It's there. Know the DBA mind if you're not a DBA. To a DBA, do they fix all the wires? No. It's easier to put up a sign. Right? Before they were DBAs, they were engineers. So this is an improvement. We moved them somewhere else. This is how the DBA view themselves. If you view them as such, you will get along with your DBA. This is how everyone else views the DBA. No more data for you. We never come back. I had this in China. Nobody laughed. I was like, Seinfeld? And they're like, Seinfeld? I go, oh, you don't know it yet. You're going to love it. Future DBA? Could be. There was a guy sitting here. I said, can I try on the suit? He's like, I don't think so. Remember, be the change you want to see in the world. It's possible. It's already out there. Make the impact. I mean, that's how you... Think of Washington. Going against the greatest army in the history of the world. People used to describe the American army. They would say the Hessians used to have like captured American soldiers parade in front of them because it would crack them up so much. They were so poorly dressed. When they went to Princeton, people figured out how they got there because they followed the tracks of blood. Because many of them didn't have shoes. That's what was possible. You have every tool in the world now. You want to change things? The ability to do so is out there. Make sure you take that chance. There's your V-Dollar views if you want. Want another award? Send me an email, rich@tusk.com. I'll give you one last story. I'll give you... Everything is possible. Gee, thank you. I'll give you one... You know, people think something's not possible. I was waiting at Open World to go to this reception. And I was running a little late, as usual, and I come out and it's raining. So I see a cab going by and I'm like, taxi! And it keeps going, taxi! And I'm yelling. Keeps going. I'm like, maybe he's off duty. So then he goes to a red light, though. So I'm like, ah, I can't get away. So I run to the car, and I'm like, taxi! And he's like, okay. I'm like, wow, really putting him out. So I go in, he goes, where are you going? I go, oh, I'm just going a few blocks to here. And he's like, all right, I'll take you. So he drives me there, and I'm like, okay, how much? And he's like, notice there's no meter. And I'm like, yeah, there's no meter. Why is that? He's like, because I'm pizza delivery. They had like a sign, looked like a taxi. I'm like, pizza delivery. He goes, you were just so insistent, I figured, all right, I'll take them. Be insistent. Let your managers know what's possible and make sure you don't miss this piece of history that you are part of, and make an impact in the world that you have out there. Thanks, and have a great day.